Good morning and welcome to the seventh episode of Hot Topics, a fire and EMS related broadcast. I'm Ken Clark, retired fire chief from Hopkinton, and the scope of intent of the podcast is to share fire and EMS service related experience of current and retired personnel on a multitude of local, regional, and national subject matter, operational items, and any other pertinent fire service related subject matter. One thing that we're not going to do here is second guess any of our incident commanders out there who are working hard every day, male and female. We'll leave that Monday morning quarterback to the dinner tables at the firehouses. My background, I'm a third generation firefighter from the town of Hopkinton, and work with two brothers, and also spent some time working with Upton Fire and Berlin Fire. Today's guest, and I'm very happy to present him, is former Hopkinton Fire Chief and paramedic Gary Doherty Sr., who's retired from multiple career fire department positions. His bio is very extensive. I'm going to review it with you very quickly. He's the Director of Fire Science and Paramedic Programs, Professor of Practice, Anna Maria College from January 2016 to the present. He was the Fire Chief for the City of Framingham, January of 09 to January of 16. He was the Fire Chief in Hopkinton from January of 97 to January of 16. And along with that, he was a paramedic here in what our subject matter is going to be today is talking about the transition from basic life support, the BLS, to the ALS. Chief came in as a paramedic, and it was just a fluent transition over to that. Took us many years, but we'll talk about that in our discussion. He was also the acting town manager of Hopkinton twice, from May of 07 to October of 07, and October of 08 to January of 09. And his background, he came from to Hopkinton from New Jersey. He was a fire chief and paramedic in Merciful Hamilton, New Jersey, District 2, from January of 93 to November of 97. He was a deputy fire chief and a paramedic in Hamilton from 86 to 85 down there. And then he started his fire service career in 78 as a firefighter paramedic until January of 82. And he's currently the Anna Maria College adjunct professor from 05 to 16 prior to being in charge of the program up there, running the fire service and the fire science and the paramedic program. And the last but not least is he works as a consultant for the MMA consulting group from August of 2010 to the present. Chief, welcome. It's always good to spend time with you. We did a little bit of catching up before the show started. Him and I worked a long time together and seamlessly, and I learned a lot from him, and he's one of the guys I owe a lot of what I learned and what I know from Chief Doherty. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate you having me here, Kenny, and as I promised you, we won't do any statistical analysis today.
I know. Yeah, I used to have to look at him like a German shepherd. He was figuring out, and I'll let him finish his story, but I got to tell the beginning. He was on the whiteboard, and he was like writing numbers, almost like the Big Bang Theory when you see them figuring out something on TV. And he was figuring out how many calls we're going to get for the Legacy Farms South and the Legacy Farms North, and it was still all on paper. Not a rock had been turned in the property to do that. And where he went with the numbers, and I was sitting there watching, I think it was in my office.
It was,
and
yeah.
I'm looking at him like a German shepherd, like, where is he going with this? And he came up with this number. But we just talked 3 weeks ago when we talked about coming here on the show, we talked about that he brought that up. And how far were you off on that?
We missed it by 100 as far as calls, and I think the population was a little different, but we were close.
Yeah.
We were very close, and that was years
ago. It was him. He was a numbers guy. Me, yeah. I was like, I had to learn that. That was part of the thing. Yeah. But I wanted to start with, how is Carol and your family doing?
Good. They're doing well.
Good.
They're doing well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I know you must be very proud, and he's already been on the show, and we'll come back later to talk about the emergency management director side, EMD side of the fire chief. Is your son Gary is currently the fire chief in the town of Hopkinton. Mm-hmm. I get to like chat with him. I stop. I see him in the station. I'll like come in just to briefly chat and catch up with him. He's doing a fantastic job. I hear from the guys, and I'm sure you're very, very proud.
Yeah, we are proud. Yeah.
Yeah.
The culmination of his career, which started back in the 90s when he was in the military.
Yeah.
You know, and went overseas and Yeah. Now he's back. So
we talked about that when he was here that day. It's like he had, and it helped with our marathon planning. He had an extensive background in the Air Force with the IEDs in Afghanistan when he was there. So it's like that's something that we could pull on his resources that he had learned there from the military and and when we did our marathon training. When and how old were you when you started in the fire service, Chief?
17. Yeah, I was actually started as a fire dispatcher, the old federal CETA program. And it kind of worked from there. So
I can remember that.
Yeah, the old CETA program. $3 an hour and no benefits.
And you liked it.
Yeah, it was something. Yeah. It was a job. And then, you know, I went to paramedic school from there and landed full-time position after that. Yep. In fact, I was the only paramedic in the city for a while until they grew the numbers and everything. So
You know, he has some interesting city down there in Trenton that he worked in. It's like it's an interesting story.
It was Trenton and Hamilton. Yeah, they were right Hamilton, there together. Yeah. So
how did the and I remember it very vividly, all the miles you put on that little, I think it was a Toyota, but how was your transition from New Jersey to Hopkins? I know you came up, you did a lot of travel and put a ton of miles on.
Yeah, it was a
record time. You could travel that route.
Yeah. It was a Honda. I don't remember which model it was. Well, let's put it this way. We bought it with 77,000 on it. It was 250 when we got rid of it.
Yeah, you did a lot.
Yeah.
We called and said, yep, I'm delayed here or there, or it'd blow in at 2 o'clock in the morning. And
that was
just the way.
The transition went really well. It was one of those, you know, tough decisions to make. Do I leave where I'm at? I'm established. I could have stayed there for, you know, a number of years. The family was there. Or do I, you know, reach, you know, another step in the career, so to speak. Yeah. So we talked about it, my wife and I. Put out a number of resumes. Had a couple interviews. And to be quite honest with you, I've told this story before, I did not remember applying to Hopkins until Ted Kozak called me.
Yeah.
And he said, are you still interested? And I'm like, well, yeah, sure, okay. And so I came up for the interview and, you know, ultimately offered me the job.
Yeah, but I thank you because you brought a skill that we, and you brought a culture that we needed at the time. Thank you very much.
No, it was ultimately a good move. Yeah. It really was. Yeah. You know, I don't regret making the move at all.
What was your experience as a paramedic prior to coming to Hopkinton?
So, when we started the paramedic program in New Jersey, there was a 7-year legislative pilot program, and they had 6 training classes, and I was in class number 4. And each class was designed to try to establish what would be the best staffing mechanisms for the paramedic units. Well, my class, which required us to do extra training, was to be standalone paramedic by yourself, no partner. You have an EMT partner or something, but you're going to be the only paramedic. You're not having any other support. And they wanted to see how effective that would be. So we were required to do extra training as a result of going to be on our own. And so I really didn't know any other than that's the way we worked and we functioned. And I got a ton of experience. And if anybody's ever watched that show, Emergency, I mean, that's, other than having a partner, that's pretty much what we did. You know, that's how it was. And I answered a lot of calls on duty, answered a lot of calls off duty, because I would go, hey, are you available? We need you. And I would go on my own and, you know, that kind of stuff. So
same as it was when you came to Hopkins.
Yeah, in the beginning, yeah. But the Hopkins transition was actually, I don't say more of a challenge, but we kind of got it thrown on us, if you remember.
Yep.
The hospital-based units, Marlboro, Leonard Morse, and Milford, were going to close, stop their non-transport units.
Yep.
And so I remember distinctly having discussions. I don't know why we had all these discussions in your office, but we did. and we went in to talk about, what do we do and this and that. And you specifically said, Chief, I'll support it 100% as long as I don't have to be a paramedic. Yeah. I'll carry somebody 2 miles on my back.
You can stick
get
with
to
a needle.
Him. Yeah, you can stick them with a needle. Yeah. And but yeah, so, you know, if you remember, we did the whole planning thing. That was one thing I think we really did well was tried to map everything out as much as we possibly can. You did this with the marathon, constantly thinking about the what ifs and everything. And what we do with the paramedics is, what's going to be the best way to deliver that service? you know, do we merge with, say, Ashland and Southborough and have a regional fly car? Or do we privatize the service, so to speak, and have our ALS come from AMR or Cataldo or someplace like that, which nobody was interested in doing?
Yeah.
And then the obviously what we ended up doing was our own program, you know, bringing our own paramedics in.
Yep.
And so we remember, I don't know if you remember, we had the one joint meeting with the Ashland guys. Hi, what do you think about this? And then we met with our guys and said, you know, here's the situation. Yep. And we did the independent or the anonymous survey. Are you interested in being paramedic? Do you support it? Which type of program do you support? And it came back from our survey that the members of our department supported us taking on ALS, and that I forget what the percentage was, but you know, say 60% were interested in becoming paramedics, which is the avenue that we chose.
Yeah. I can remember that. That was our focus for a long time on hiring.
Yeah. Yes.
That kind of like got that ball rolling as we move forward and we're able to expand. We had to first look for the medics, and then we always thought it would be easier to get a medic that was already trained and then train him to be a firefighter.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's cheaper too.
Yeah.
You know, from a financial perspective, just put your other hat on, it is cheaper. And the first couple hires that we did hire, you know, guys that were trained as firefighters also.
Yeah.
Jimmy and Rich were a couple of our very first hires, and they were both.
Yeah. And I always looked at the medics like there was like, all the medics are good, but we were blessed to have like some really top notch Rich, Jimmy Fredericks,
right?
Tim Healy coming in.
Oh yeah, Timmy Healy.
And the chief always filled the blanks in. If we had a something in the middle of the night that was really hot, the chief all of a sudden you would see ones off, and you'd be there to help them out. And I remember on one of my last fires, I almost got to go in. The guy on Hayden Road, we were just ready to make entry into a really cranking garage fire. The guy had got burned working on a car, welding, and it ignited the gas tank in the vehicle. And he needed to go, and Saltbro came with an ambulance but only had one medic, and they needed a second one. I remember I was like with Bobby Bartlett and Tooch ready to go push in. And you said, oh, you need to take command because I got to go in the ambulance. You said, oh, hadn't got to do this in a long time. Probably never get to do it again. It was fun. But that's what you had to do. Just had to roll the punches and get stuff done.
Roll with the punches, So the transition, I think it went very well. And if you remember, we actually did it in steps. We had our basic life support system that was already in place. And at that point, we had already gone to three ambulances.
Yeah.
Because when I got here in town, there was only the one in service.
Yep.
The second one was at the Woodville station, but it was not operable.
Yep.
And Davey Hayward took the bull by the horns to get that back up in service.
Yep.
And it took us a while, but we did do that.
Yep.
But by that time, we were up to three ambulances.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many calls you and I went on as third ambulances. You know, but we were busy with the ambulances. But if you remember, we went to the intermediate level because we figured two things. We'd be able to generate some call volume that would indicate the need for the service. But the second thing was it would allow Jimmy and Rich and others to maintain their skills.
Yes.
And so, and we had some pretty good calls even at the intermediate level.
Yeah.
Just doing airway maintenance and that kind of stuff.
And that just proved, that your strength, the numbers showed that it was a needed program and would benefit the town of Hopkins and its citizens.
You know, and the other thing that was important for us, I think, was that Dr. Hopkins we were the first, the fire department assigned to him for medical control.
Yep.
Dr. Steinberg had been doing it, but he was just swamped. And he said, well, I can give you Jeff. I'm assuming he still is the medical director, but the point is that working with Dr. Hopkins was great. Young guy, willing to let us work together.
Yep,
but the emphasis was we did not want the waiver. If you remember, we could have got the single paramedic waiver. And it was only going to be good for a couple of years, and then we'd have to have multiple medics, and we just didn't want to go through all that. And that was after discussion with Jimmy and Rich and others.
Yep.
So we went to that intermediate level, and then we said, when we're ready, we're going to pull the trigger at the full paramedic level.
Yep.
And so we got Stevie, Tommy, others trained.
Yep.
And that stuff. We were at the point where we got the two medics because I could fill in where needed.
Yep.
You're always
the trump card.
And so we pulled the trigger on it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I can remember those days that very vividly because I was in getting my hip replaced at Newton Wellesley.
Yep.
And you called me one day and said, "Oh, well, like going to go today, and then for some reason it didn't go, but it went the next day.
Yeah, we couldn't get the drug boxes out of the pharmacy.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Fredericks had to go down and run interference.
Yeah.
And it's funny how the state regulations, in order to get the drug box filled, you had to be licensed as a paramedic, or your unit had to be ALS licensed, but they couldn't license it until they inspected the drug box.
Yeah. So it's kind of like that ironic cat.
So
the cat was chasing the tail thing.
So we had to get the state involved. Dave Fletcher from the state got involved with us, our inspector, and actually called Milford and said, "This is what we're doing," da da da, so forth. And Jimmy Fredericks went over with the drug boxes and waited for him to fill them, and then brought them back. So, so Fletcher actually came back the next day and gave us the thumbs up, and we were good to go.
It's like I can remember that stuff. You worked so hard, and all the guys at the station were 100% in, and we got it up and running. And
it was a team effort. It wasn't just me. Yeah, it was a team effort. Yeah, everybody kicked in together, you know.
But, and it's like just has provided so many positive benefits to the town of Hopkins and the people that we serve.
Yeah.
It's like, what sticks in your mind as some of the most memorable incident responses, positive and negative, that we did?
Oh,
I know you and I did a lot of stuff.
Well, I think one that I talk about, in fact, at the college, I use it as an example when in our incident command modules, we talk about, you know, unified command and multi-agency response. And it was the methane tanker, it didn't explode, but it was split open, and we had the accident stuff up in the pike.
Yeah.
And working with the state police for 14 or whatever number of hours we worked with them. And that kind of stuff. That was one. I mean, obviously, we're all going to remember the explosion downtown with the sorry outcome of that event with
three
the two young girls.
East from where we're sitting.
Yeah. I remember that. I don't know. I you were there as quick as I was that night, but I remember when it exploded. It woke me up, and my wife said to me, "My God, what was that?" And I said to her, "Oh, something at the LNG plant blew up." That was my first thought, was we had the explosion at the LNG plant.
Same discussion went on at my house. The north window was open, and I could actually feel that blast come in, and Marie says, "Oh, where are you going?" I said, "Oh, I bet you were going to the LNG plant."
Yeah, that's what I thought. And then the box tapped in right behind it, and I'm like, "Oh, no, that's a downtown box." Yep. It's something. Yep. And then right after that, I don't know who it was, because a major explosion in the center of town. So, and then, look at the involvement there and the training that we had for that. I mean, the technical rescue teams, we had to deal with that. And the multiple rescues that the guys made that day, unfortunately, the outcome, you would have liked the 100% success, but it was nothing that the guys could have done any differently than they did for that outcome.
I think that was one of the proudest moments I ever had of our staff to tackle that.
Yep.
Like it was a running back with $1 million ball in his hand, and it's they did unbelievable. That was if I remember, that was also it exceeded a 24-hour. Time limit that we were at that scene from it happened till we were done.
Yeah, it was intense. Yeah, I'm sure there's many others. I mean, I remember when I first came to town here, and you said to me, I said something to you about brush fires or something, and I said, Ken, I don't have much experience in brush fires, and he says, "Oh, don't worry about it. We'll take care of that for you here." and I said, "Oh, really?" He goes, "Yeah." And you asked me about the size of it. I said, "The most I ever had in a brush fire was like 10 acres. I mean, we didn't have big brush fires down there."
Yeah.
And you said, "Oh, we'll chase 300 acres and not think twice about it." And sure enough, the spring fall allowed Milford to start burning that year. And I learned how to handle brush fires and tanker operations and a lot of things that way.
That was just a completely different animal. And it's like, as a public safety agency, you got to be prepared for all those, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking to the choir here. So it's like, that was interesting to you get into that around a 150 or a 200 in Milford there, and or that big ridge across from Sandy Beach that runs from Milford into Hopkinton and Upton there, that big ridge.
Yeah, we were in there a few times.
There's been some notable ones. It's like...
It's interesting because we used to have the discussion in the morning, what's your schedule look like? And we decide ahead of time who was going to Milford.
Yeah.
You'd say, "Oh, no, I got like 10 inspections today. All right, I'll go to Milford today.
Okay.
Sorry, I got to meet with the selectman. You're going to have to go." Yeah. And So we accomplished a lot. I mean, we doubled the size of the department during that time period.
Yeah.
Got the staffing up, new fire, and we bought new engine too.
Yep.
I don't know how many ambulances we bought. We bought a lot of ambulances. We went to three.
Yeah.
We went up to the three. Yep. We were running the three, and you took the bull by the horns on both brush units, the new H6, the new engine, brush six.
Yeah, we upgraded that, I think, twice. We went from we had the 56, then we went to the 78, and then they got the 95 ton with a power steering, which is just the first time we ever had power steering on a brush truck. And it was probably the one that you needed the most out of it. We never had it, but it was like, nope.
Yeah.
And I smile. I can still hear that climbing the hill by my house occasionally. Motor.
And then the H11 or brush 11, you did that whole thing yourself, basically, getting that whole thing up and running. So
we transitioned from the 56 weapons carrier up until to the 07 F550 with the tank and all that on it.
Which they still have.
And they're still using it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
so they're getting their money's worth out of that truck.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think engine 2 was really the only fire apparatus that we bought. I mean, we put the ladder in service, but then we decommissioned it.
Yeah, and we failed the test.
Yeah, and we just used mutual aid ladders for a number of years, and Chief Slaman brought the ladder back, which is good.
Good
for him.
A feather in his cap, and I can remember, like, Milford, EMC bought us the old Milford ladder when they got a new one there, and we used it when we could, and it's like, did some good stuff. Now, what are some of your hobbies and interests outside the fire department, Chief?
Oh, I'm big into aviation. I love to fly. I own an airplane. I base it up at Fitchburg Airport.
Yep.
So I got involved with flying 15 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. I mean, intently flying. I've always been interested in it, but it's and I've got a number of certifications with regards to the aviation world. I fly as part of the state STEM program, science, technology.
Oh, yep.
Yeah, I fly students a few times a year. We fly into Boston, right into Logan Airport. We fly the kids into Logan, and there's a whole day that the state puts up for the STEM program, so I do that. I'm a drone pilot. I fly drones a fair amount. And so we teach a drone program.
You
college.
Did the training for the Hopkins and Blue Team.
I did.
For the drone.
No, the Red Team.
Oh, Red Team.
The Red Team, yeah. I saw the blue guys had a drone. The fact that the marathon, Greg was flying it, but I don't know who did their training, but I work with fire guys. Yeah.
Yep.
With regards to that, I did do Holden Police. I did their training for them, and I've done it a few other places as well.
Yeah.
And I've made myself available. I tell the chiefs up there, I've got, let me know. I've got drones here. I got drones at the college.
Yep.
So, we have a full semester course, and the students can get certified in drones.
Yep.
It's
fantastic to be able to sit and catch up with your chief. Thank you very much.
It's always been fun.
One little section I cover at the end is, and I'm going to go back out to our listeners out there, is it's hottopics@hcam.tv. And I encourage you to send questions in to my email there. That's my email. And I'm going to go through three questions right now that I picked up from the community. And the first one is from Joe and Hopkin. How much do fire trucks and ambulances cost?
A lot.
I think the last ladder they bought here, in listening, it was $1.2 million. And Ashland just got one that ran around $2 million, two plus. And the engines now are running like in the 880s.
At least,
depending on what you get, maybe a little bit more. And the ambulances are up into the sixes, five to sixes, which is crazy.
Yeah.
We used to spend 300,000 on them. We thought we were spending a lot of money on what we were getting, but there's just a lot of things that are required of them now, and that's the going price. There's a lot of different things that really jumped up during the COVID.
And the supply chain. We used to get a fire engine in 6 months. Yeah. Now it's 2 years.
Yep.
So.
And I know that in Berlin, where I worked for a short time, they ordered one when I was there, and I've been out over 2 years, and they still haven't got an ambulance.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy for sure.
It's
what is it? And this question made me smile. Thank you, Andrea, in Hopkinton. What is a dry hydrant if it has water in it? We had the session where I had Lynn here. We talked about what do we do for fire. Lynn Morahan, the deputy in Ashland. I said, and the dry hydrant is some type of, it might be a tank, or it might be a concrete thing. A concrete water-holding device underground, or it might even be a pond or a water supply. And they put piping into it so that a fire truck can pull up to it, attach a length of hose to it, and then the trucks are equipped with what they call a primer that extracts air and draws the water up into the pump to gain a to gain what they call a prime, and then they can pump the water and direct it to wherever they need it. We had a serious fire on Daniel Shea Road, and we used a dry hydrant down there, a good attic fire from a lightning strike when I was chief, and was paramount in keeping the that fire in control and just containing that fire to the attic.
Yeah, we had the one up on either, we did the north or south mill. That big
And that had just a dry hydrant that was tied directly to Blood's Pond down there. And I think we went three alarms on that.
Yeah, Scotty Jadraska was driving. It was the first time we used that.
And that was like, again, it was a short lay of hose. It was maybe 200 feet and we were at the fire scene.
Yeah, it wasn't much.
Worked really, really good. Good point, Chief.
Yeah, we did with the fire there. Your point to Daniel Shea is according to my son, he said that cistern up there has been used like 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
That's so. You know, we did a lot of work with that over the years, developing the size and specifications for that and everything.
I think when I don't know what they have now. I never asked, but we had like 21 or 22 when I got done.
I don't remember. We had a number.
We would divide them up quarterly, 4 times for each of the duty groups to do them, and over a chance of 4 years, every group would have tested and got put their hands on it. So that was something. I got one more question from Peter in Hopkinton. Thank you, Peter. Does Hopkinton Fire still have the children infant car seat installation program? They do. That's headed up by firefighter Patrick Gross. But now instead of one, there's 3 personnel that have been certified to do that. And I encourage you to call the station, get your name on the list if someone's new to car seats. I actually had a question. My granddaughter was old enough, we went to a booster seat. So I had a question for Patrick on that myself. And it's like, and he said, no, now we have 3 people. But that's a really good program, safety program. If some parents are unsure about one, call down there, get on the schedule and get it done, and they'll help you and answer any questions that you may have for that. They're really good at that. So we're just about ready to finish up today's. The Chief, again, thank you.
No, thanks for having me.
Spending time with you. Yeah. Thanks for coming in.
Absolutely.
And again, any questions that you may have, feel free to send them to my email at, again, it's hottopics, HOTOPICS at hcam.tv. And thank you very much for being with us today.